Hey everyone, we've had a couple of questions come up related to having discussions with parents or outside providers about just tough conversations related to neurodiverse affirming approaches, supporting regulation. We've also had a couple of things pop up where parents were reporting feeling like they weren't getting enough education, not the what they were wanting. So I want to bring this to the level of conversation because I think there are some things for us to think about within this context. And I'm going to dub this my neurodiversity affirming cocoon theory. And I'll tie all this back up for you also. So we are sort of living in a bubble in our clinic, being that we are a neurodiverse affirming clinic. We're around like-minded professionals. And I think when that happens, we keep going further and further in that direction, right? As you communicate openly to your colleagues, your mentors, you also inevitably go further down the line of becoming more and more neurodiverse affirming. And we start to normalize conversations about autism and sensory differences and all the things that are very normal in our space. And we start to take it for granted. It becomes just like part of our being. I think what we have to keep in mind, though, is that one, when we go outside of our little cozy cocoon, we're going to be encountering individuals, both parents and professionals, who have not been in this cocoon. They're in the, we'll call it the general society cocoon of thinking about things in a more concrete, black and white perspective and thinking about like behavior in terms of more compliance and expectations and that sort of thing. So we have to sort of adjust for these audiences. And there's a couple of ways I think this is popping up frequently. And like I said, I'm seeing this across many different contexts. One is the way that we provide education to parents. I think on one hand, we have to become very deliberate in our education and make sure that all these really abstract concepts that we're doing, right? We're doing a lot of just being with the patient and just noticing and co-regulating. That's a super abstract space to be in. And as much as you educate and train and tell the parents that's what you're doing, they're going, huh? But all I'm seeing is play. They don't get it. So you have to think about this. How do we take these abstract concepts and make things from that that are black and white? How can I take a strategy that I'm using, that I'm just doing, and label it, define it, to pass it along and educate it to somebody else? I think if we're not doing that, that's when we get feedback from parents being like, they're not doing anything in therapy. I have no idea what they're doing. Or they're asking you for education. They're saying, what can I be doing at home over and over and over and over? And you're going, nothing, just play with your kid. Like, just, I don't have any specific things for you to do. But if you find they keep coming back to you with that, well, what can I do at home? What do I do at home? They're looking for specifics. And this is where you have to dig deep into and self-reflect on your own practice and think about these abstract things that I'm doing, the way that I am, the way that I'm being with this client. How can I turn that into something concrete? We have some good resources for this. In the Farmington office, I know for sure we have a book about DIR floor time, for example, that kind of breaks down different techniques into handouts. And even like, when we think about feeding, for example, we have SOS handouts that have really specific things like these are the things you can do at home kind of a deal. And they work, a lot of them that will still work even within the context of neurodiverse affirming and responsive feeding. And so, we might have to dig, we might have to create more resources too. If you guys want some specific handouts to go to, if a family gets a handout and they're like, do XYZ, that's a lot easier to them than you giving them the theory, the background, the abstract stuff in the session. I think the other space that this plays out is the way that we guide and lead and provide feedback to families. So again, if you think about the context that we are in this like cushy little neurodiverse affirming cocoon where we're all like-minded, when you step outside of that, where the rest of the world and our families live day to day, it can be a huge culture shock coming in. So the conversations that we tend to normalize, like, oh, they might be a little bit autistic or, whatever it is you're talking about, or, they're developmental skills are behind, their language is behind, they're not using language, whatever it is, whatever feedback you're giving to that parent, keep in mind that that parent might be coming from a space of, this is catastrophic. You know, if they have preconceived ideas and stereotypical views, which many people do, about some of the diagnoses or suggestions of diagnoses that you're throwing around, that might really freak them out to be like, oh, my kid could have ADHD, my kid could have autism, my kid has a language delay. So, you know, or be a Gestalt language processor, like whatever it is, you want to make sure that you are bringing it up in a way, and it will depend on the parent and your relationship with them, certainly, that takes that piece into consideration. You know, you might just ask them questions and probe a little bit, like, what are your thoughts and feelings around them, you know, stimming, or around them shaking their hands, or however you want to call it, or around them lining up toys, or like, have you noticed this before, and is this any concern of yours? And you don't necessarily have to connect it with a potential label. You might want to wait and feel it out a little bit, you know. Sometimes parents will ask you very directly. I think we have to keep in mind that just because they ask directly, like, what does something mean, that doesn't mean that they're looking for or thinking about you might be starting to have those conversations about maybe your child is neurodiverse, you know? And it will, again, very much depend on the parent. It'll depend on their previous life experience. It'll depend on how many kids they've had, their own experiences with people who are neurodiverse. This came up in a parent ed session we had not too long ago where, you know, the parent was basically like, expressed a lot of concern about having her child labeled autistic because her experience with autism and developmental delays and people who were different came back from when she was in school and how people talked about those kids, how they were isolated from the rest of the kids. So we have to keep that life context, I think, in mind when we're having conversations with families, when we're giving them guidance. And then also, like I said, when we're giving education, and we see this also even with professionals too, right? We have had this come up before where, you know, an outside social worker or psychologist or another therapist is like, okay, but what do you want me to do with them in school? Like, what are your strategies? And how we can take some of the abstract stuff that we're doing. How do we take these neurodiverse affirming components and put it into concrete? I think what's tricky about this is because we are a neurodivergent affirming clinic, we're very child-led, we're very play-based, all of this exists within a really high-level, abstract thinking, gray area thinking type of a space. And you guys have been doing this for such a long time, and you're so embedded in the culture, being in this neurodiverse affirming cocoon that we have in the clinic, you're so embedded in the culture, it becomes second nature. And it becomes such second nature that you don't even think about it as being different than what other people are doing. So even, you know, when we think about like feeding, for example, there might be things that you're doing naturally that you think like, oh, they see what I'm doing. They see that I'm playing with the food and how I'm playing with the food. But you might need to define that for the family and give specific characteristics. Like, here's what I did. I presented the food. Maybe I tried to gently encourage, but once he pushed back, I dropped the expectation. You might have to really like spell it out for the parent. They might not be picking up as much from watching you as you think that they are. They might just see they're playing. So by you going through and labeling different techniques, or by making any of that piece more concrete, we bring it down to this kind of black and white thinking where it's a lot more tangible for families to access. And I think this is where we get disconnect sometimes in the clinic. So something to keep in mind, because like I said, this theme has been coming up for a while, and I think that's how we can tie it together. To think outside of our cocoon, what is that parent coming in? What are they seeing? What is their experience? And assume that everything you're doing is completely brand new to them. Same with those professionals you're working with outside of the clinic, the parents, whoever it might be, even sometimes other therapists. The more you assume that you are not necessarily speaking the same language, the more specific you will be in your education, the more careful you will be in your definitions and your guidance and your feedback and suggestions. And I think that will just strengthen the parent involvement that we get, and therefore then the progress with the child. If you do find that you're struggling building rapport with any particular, patient or their parents, or you are feeling like they keep coming back to you for support that you feel like you can't provide, reach out to me and let's do some troubleshooting.